This is CliffCentral.com. Future CEOs on CliffCentral.com.
Welcome to Future CEOs here on Cliff Central. My name is Gareth Armstrong. It is great to be with you today. Are you a future CEO? We ask this question every week to you, our audience. If you can answer that question, yes, I am a future CEO, well, then this is the show for you. What do we do here? We try and bring you as close to up and personal, really, really close to the stories, the interesting parts of the people who we often see as these unapproachable. Sometimes they, you may look at them and you think, that person's sitting in an ivory tower, I can't get close to them. CEOs, senior executives, entrepreneurs that are really, really doing a great job. And we bring them into studio and we ask them to share their stories. How do they do what they do? How did they get to where they are? These are their stories here on Future CEOs, only on Cliff Central. Today is no different. We have a very, very a fascinating individual in studio here. How do I describe you, Candy? You're an influencer, and can I add of note? Is that okay? Can I say that?
You can say that, Garrett.
Oh, good. I'm glad that you're not too shy to say that you are an influencer, but you are. I mean, there's a massive organization that you have influence over, a very positive influence over. Candy, would you mind taking 30 seconds, introducing yourself to our Future CEOs community, and then I'll brag on your behalf if you don't do enough of it.
I'd love you to brag on my behalf. It's not easy to brag on behalf of myself. But good afternoon, and thanks very, very much for having me on the show again. It's always such a pleasure to be interviewed by yourself and Shlubi, and to have the opportunity to talk to interested people about the wonderful subject of business and business in all its forms. I have the great pleasure of heading up corporate affairs for Tsogo Sun. Mm-hmm. We're a listed entity on the Johannesburg Stock Exchange. Most people will be familiar with many of our properties, such as Monte Casino, Suncoast, all the Southern Sun hotels, etc. When you say an influencer, yes, I guess to some degree, I have a very big responsibility to ensure that my company is behaving appropriately and responsibly. And then secondly, the way I see it is the influencing that I do, my role, is kind of to humanize business and to ensure that the business is not behaving in a way that is not serving society beneficially.
We do live in tumultuous times. I mean, there's so much going on from a technological perspective that is impacting the way that businesses have to function to be competitive. There's a great deal going on when it comes to labor and the protection that labor really needs. But in relation to this idea of technology, I know I was just chatting to someone off air about the choice of studies and whether or not they should go into mining. And mining is, I mean, there's some massive things going on. I know that there's a mine over in Australia where the entire open cast mining is essentially a robot that's running it, and the one operator that operates these robots sits 1,200 kilometers away. It's an engineer, and so we've got these incredible things going on. You must be experienced some of that. It's good to hear someone that is the human voice of a large business.
Yeah, I think that, you know, I always call it the 80s mentality. Unfortunately, we've moved very far away from that 80s mentality, and that was kind of a global awakening period where business suddenly started to realize that this attitude is of take, make, and throw away was actually not serving it. And some people are still, you know, reluctant to change or to move forward and to see business or businesses themselves tend to sometimes have legacy issues that relate still to this old-fashioned 80s mentality. But certainly, you know, the world is changing at a rapid pace, and everything that we know or that we thought we knew is going through extraordinary and significant change. Everything from our economies, our politics across the globe, to things like the environment and climate change. And then we've got personal relationship change, where the constructs that society had formed for itself mm-hmm. in the past
and relied on heavily
have stopped serving the family unit, for example, that no longer looks like it used to be expected to look. And so the term comfort zone really, I believe, is not applicable anymore, because what you find is that the pace of change is so quick that there really isn't enough time to get comfortable, because as soon as you think that you know something, or you can understand something, or be arrogant enough to think that you have it all worked out, something will come through so quickly as to throw all of that up in the air, and you have to make the changes to keep up.
I was sitting at Alexander Forbes in the auditorium today. They have just launched an internal L&D program called Empower. And the presentation that was given was sharing that there used to be this mentality that you'd be in your career for a very long time, of course. And we all hope for that kind of stability. But what is actually happening is that you are moving rapidly through organizations or out of organizations as a result of this continuous change that is happening. And so every 5 years, and I think that's even potentially some old data, every 5 years, what you used to do has now changed. It's not just, and what you thought you knew has also changed.
So exactly.
Yeah, it's a fascinating world that we're in. I think you're probably seeing it and feeling it as you move around the country and as you move around your different operations, because it's not just in the country, it's internationally. Let's quickly talk a little bit about your journey, though. So often people and our future CEOs, they want to be able to hear who's behind the position. So you're in a fantastic position. I want to brag a little bit about some of the work you do, but can we just go back a little bit? Where did you grow up? Who are you? Just a little bit of that, please.
Gareth, I grew up right here in Jersey, I came from a large family. Mm. I was the last born of four children,
okay.
So I sometimes was a little bit invisible in my family, because I was a little bit more quiet and thoughtful, and I did a lot of observing. My parents were not, I guess, your average sort of sitcom family type of parents. Mm. My dad was a stay-at-home dad, and he was an artist.
Okay.
So so that was different from what I've discovered as I've grown older, that's a different way of growing up. Mm-hmm. My mom was a career woman, and she headed up the PR department for what is now known as Tiger Brands.
Okay, interesting.
Yeah, so that was sort of our... Well, the way that I saw the world was slightly different to the way everybody else did. Mm. She was also a member of the Black Sash. So back in those days, while we grew up in a privileged society, I spent a lot of my childhood years following her to different sort of rallies and things like that, and trying to make sense of the society that I was born into.
So your social conscience really was germinated very early on. This wasn't just a case of a point where you looked out into the world and you said, I can't do this anymore. Rather, this was a slow development of a social voice, a consciousness, as a result of thank you, Mom, it sounds like.
Absolutely. And, you know, what you don't know when you're a child growing up is what the expectation is of society. So that was the reality that I lived in, was a very different reality than many white South Africans growing up in the late 70s and early 80s experienced. And it was only sometime in the sort of mid 80s, when I went to high school, that I began to piece the whole thing together, and then took up the cause myself. So you know, we were encouraged in my family always to speak our minds. We never had a bedtime.
Interesting.
We never had any real rules or anything. They were all self-imposed boundaries that we were comfortable with as children. And it was actually a wonderful environment to grow people with the ability to become influencers, I think.
I'm glad to hear that you're the kind of person that comes out of this self-regulating type of environment, because I've often wondered about these new schools that are popping up where, you know, Montessori is probably an example of it, where go with the child's interest. It seems a little loose for me, but if you're the product of that kind of environment, well then I'm convinced.
Yeah, I think self-imposed boundaries are really what will inspire people to do the right thing ultimately. You know, if it feels good to you and it's the right thing to do, then that, you know, nobody needs to enforce anything on you.
Well, I guess if we can, let me support that a little bit, saying this, that it really depends on your values, isn't it?
So
when you say if it feels good, I say whoa, hold on. Some things feel great, but aren't all that good,
no.
And certainly detrimental.
Indeed, yeah.
How did you develop that side of you then? So this idea that, well, let's go after what we are attracted towards, what we feel is the right thing. How did then your parents, in an environment where it doesn't sound like there was too much necessity to enforce, how did they enforce when they needed to? And because that would have influenced the way that you lead now, surely.
I believe so, yes. There was always a consistency. So I think consistency is key, and I practice that with my own children as well. Mm. Is that, you know, just having a very clear voice within your family, and from the other side being a child in a family, and knowing that certain things are expected of you. So there's a lot of expectation. There's also a lot of support. You always have this massive feeling of support at your back, so that you feel almost that you could take on the world. Mm. You could do anything. Mm. But then also realizing that everything begins with two things, one being kindness and the other being mutual respect. Mm. And I really feel that was of significance in my early younger days. Mm. Because then what it does is it causes you to make sure that before you make any decisions, you ask yourself, is this a good decision?
Mm. Is it going to result in an increase in respect? Is it going to be kind? Is it going to be good? I like
that. And just by asking, and you can do this with young children, for those people listening who have young kids, and you ask them and encourage them when they come and ask you, may I do X, Y, Z, to counter respond and say, is that a good decision? Mm. Do you think it is? And then it forces them to actually consider what they're asking. And 9 times out of 10, they come up with the right answer the most appropriate one.
Well, thank you for sharing. And these are such important insights, especially as we all develop as future CEOs. Let's fast forward a little bit. And I'm going to introduce some programs that you have. Did you inherit them? Did you bring them into the organization? There's Tsogo-san Entrepreneurs. Then there's also, you mentioned climate. You're involved with Miss Earth and Generation Earth. You support them in various ways. And there's a couple of other things that you're doing at Tsogo-san, which are phenomenal. And I know you've been awarded the third most empowered organization in the JSE. On the JSE, is that correct?
Yes, ranked the third most empowered.
Okay, fantastic.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
So just share, please tell us about that journey. Did you inherit it? Did you bring it in? How did you get that opportunity, please?
I actually started with my current company when I was 23 years old in 1997.
Oh, wow. So all that stuff that I was talking about.
I don't think, were you born in 1997?
I may look young, but thank you for that compliment.
Yeah, so I've been there 20 years. Mm. And it's been a wonderful journey, I must say. You know, when you go into working in an organization and you're able to grow up along with that company and influence what future decisions they make, and be a part of something that, you know, is what their success is your success, and vice versa. Mm. It's been a real fabulous journey. So yes, I did start these programs that you've mentioned. And back then, I think it was about 99, and I was in the HR department, and the major shareholder of Sorgel Sun at that time, called Southern Sun, was SAB Miller. And SAB Miller was on a drive to ensure that they were operating sustainably. So they introduced us to a concept called the triple bottom line, which the triple bottom line basically ensures that businesses account for not only their profits, but also their treatment of people,
the impact,
and the treatment of planet. That's really the triple bottom line in a nutshell. So I was there right from the start, and fortunately exposed to all the thinking, which back then was quite advanced in the Northern Hemisphere, in the UK and so on, and in Europe, but not particularly advanced in Africa or South Africa. So that was my sort of entry point into the field that I'm now in.
So I just wanted to quickly interrupt. So you started at Sorgel Sun as what?
I started as an HR administrator.
An HR administrator. In other words, you were there to serve all the other HR people. That's kind
precisely.
Of right.
Yes, exactly. Yeah.
Okay, so you went from HR administrator all the way to now GM of corporate affairs there.
Yes.
And I mean, what a phenomenal ride. But at what point then did you become that influence? So you're talking about 99, there was that introduction of the triple bottom line. At what point did you begin to influence that? Or were you able to influence it quite early, being a voice in HR, which is a key place in the business?
Well, it's a good question, Gareth, because I think when you're 23 or 24 years old, you know, you're walking around with these wide eyes, and everybody is so impressive to you that you work
exactly.
with, you know. So I did a lot of learning and a lot of observing, similar to the way I approached my own family when I was small, looking at these people who were all older than me and more intelligent.
Okay,
that's kind of how I saw myself in Sorgel. And via that, I developed very good relationships with certain people who then became filled mentor roles for me. And so I think I began to be able to really influence the work that in the citizenship space probably around about 2005, when I was promoted to management. And then I became, but still I was in HR because we didn't have a corporate affairs department back then.
It's amazing how things change and grow and develop. Eh?
Yeah, it's really actually quite phenomenal. So what happened was then they sort of formalized the structure around the citizenship process. And that's where I was like, okay, how are we going to strategize? What are we going to do? What does the company need? We did a whole exercise on the business case for corporate accountability, which is what we called it back then. And as a result of that, and also simultaneously, the government was introducing the triple BEE codes of good practice. So I was working a lot with the Department of Tourism at that time.
Okay, fantastic.
You know, to just ensure that the tourism charter was designed in such a way that it provided the right type of empowerment for the industry.
So we've got you to thank for a lot more than just what you're doing at
Tourism.
Oh, no. Thank you. I'll say thank you on behalf of everyone else.
Oh,
thank
thanks,
you. Okay, so you...
Yeah. So it was a roundabout there.
What I'm hearing is there's an interesting strategy that's coming out here, which is this, that you, and whether it was purposely driven this way or not is not relevant at this point, but you were able to gather a voice through mentors and champions that were above you in the organization. Of course, that would have been on their own growth path in the organization.
Yes.
That seems to be
precisely
how you would have created a voice.
Exactly.
Interesting.
Exactly.
Interesting.
Yeah.
And then let's go to the call. The call, which is, hi, Candy, this is the big boss. We want you to be GM of corporate affairs.
Oh, man, it never works like that, Gareth. You know that.
No, I do. But I was just checking. Maybe it does.
No.
So just tell us then, what has that process been like? Because there's a couple of different aspects to that. There is maybe a bit of prestige. I mean, there's nothing wrong with being able to say, hello, I am the GM. But there's also the responsibility which comes. You have to have broad shoulders to be able to shoulder a lot of what comes your way. Especially given some of the things that you're doing. Please just talk to us a little bit about that.
Well, moving, you know, the journey from 2005 to 2011, because I sort of took over this role in 2011 only, and I'm going to tell you a story about what happened in just after 2005. I think it was about late 2006. That will hopefully not shatter everybody's dreams of success and the straight and narrow path to it.
Sure.
But frankly, I arrived at the place where I needed to arrive anyway, or maybe because of. So in 2006, my dad had passed away in 2004. My mom wasn't particularly well. She had Alzheimer's and Parkinson's.
Oh, wow.
And I was a single parent of these three young children. We had a difficult family sort of setup. My sister went off to live in Switzerland in the late 80s. So it was really just what it came down to was it came down to me.
To you, yeah.
As the youngest child in my family. With three children, being a single parent, with a father who had passed away, a sick mother, and a full-time job.
And then no support.
And no support.
Mm.
So I devised a plan.
Okay.
Because that's what you have to do when you're faced with challenges. And I basically decided that I needed to work from home. I thought, what I can do is I can, all this work that I'm doing and I'm spending all my time in the office, I can actually just do it all at home and go in for meetings.
Mm.
And I'm telling it with a smile on my face because I'm just thinking of the ignorance and arrogance of being in your sort of late 20s when you ask questions like this.
Well, I'm just wondering, how was this received? And
I went to our then CEO and I said to him, this is my situation and I'd like to no longer have to come into the office and I'll work from home. And he said, let me think about it.
Which is
very politely.
Which is him actually saying no.
So they then came back to me and they said to me, you know what, you can work from home.
Fantastic.
But here's the proviso, and it was based on the labor, you know, practices and things like that. You need to resign and then you need to apply to us and become a consultant.
Okay,
and then we'll contract you and you can become a consultant to the company.
Potentially a really big risk there, especially given the feeling around security within a large organization that you've dedicated so much time to. This is a big risk.
Yeah, yeah. And obviously this goes back 11 or 12 years or whatever it is now. But, you know, when you're faced with a troublesome situation at home, but you're so passionate about your job and you really, really feel that you can make a difference, and if you were just given this opportunity, you could make it work.
Yeah. So you said yes.
So, long story short, I did say yes.
Okay.
And what actually resulted from that was a lot of personal growth for me. And the company was so fantastic to me during that period of time. I formed my own consulting practice. I did indeed work from home.
Mm.
I serviced other companies as well that were complementary with Sogo-san. And I started to become an entrepreneur.
Interesting.
Amazingly enough. I began to see myself differently.
And I'm seeing you differently, in fact, because I didn't know this about
you.
No,
and I haven't discussed this before.
Now there's Sogo-san entrepreneurs and suddenly I can see it. Yeah,
it's
exactly.
No-brainer. So I did that for 6 years. And it was really fabulous. And I enjoyed being able to you know, still be completely committed to my role in business, but also be completely committed to my family.
You must have been super organized.
I was super organized.
To be able to do this, you had to just, minute by minute, you had to know what you were doing.
Yes, you know, it gives new meaning to the words billable hours.
Mm,
yeah.
Mm.
Anyway, but it was a great time in my life. And I worked very closely. I'm not sure if you're familiar with Billy Gallagher, who was...
I certainly know the name.
Yeah, he was really a very supportive person, and he was in a role where he was also working with me on the citizenship side of things for Sogo and so on and so forth. So the whole thing worked beautifully. And then in 2011, Sogo acquired Gold Reef Resorts. And as a result of that acquisition, in around about late 2011, early 2012. We reverse listed because Gold Reef was listed. We were not reverse listed on the JSE. And as a result of that, integrated our gaming division and our hotels division as well. And then there was this new opportunity for me, and my children had grown up. So the whole thing kind of really actually worked beautifully.
But can I
came back.
I just want to interject here. It worked beautifully, but what we mustn't be mistaken to think is that it was a walk in the park.
It certainly was not a walk in the park.
And we also should not discredit the fact that you had to have a huge amount of courage, and you had to know how to position this to your CEO to be able to get it right in the first place. I mean, so there's a lot of interesting things that we could be talking about here that happened in between all of this. But anyway, so I'm sorry, the new opportunity. Yes. And with this new opportunity come other opportunities.
Exactly.
And so then Miss Earth, Generation Earth, Tsoga Entrepreneurs, talk to us very quickly about your voice there.
Yes. So part of my role within my portfolio remains citizenship, as it always has. And within there, you know, the role of or the portfolio of citizenship has gone through many changes within the organization over the years. I think we've really got to a place now where we're truly not just paying lip service to the priorities that we've put down. We've formed partnerships with Miss Earth South Africa and Generation Earth and others in the environmental space to ensure that as a very, very large organization with a national footprint and a continental footprint within Africa and offshore as well, we're actually very, very conscious of what we're doing in the environment.
And if I may, that's with our friend Catherine Constantinides.
Absolutely.
And
Ella Bella and
exactly.
so on.
Exactly.
Yeah. Now, what they do so well with us is that we're both interested in the same thing. And what we're interested in is creating a movement, ensuring that certainly all the practicalities of being environmentally responsible need to be in place. But the next logical step is basically educating people. And from a corporate point of view, it's educating all of your stakeholders, starting with your employees and going all the way through your customers, suppliers, etc. But really actively going out there and working in communities, working with young children, very importantly, but then working with adults so that they can then transfer this information onwards into our society. And we're hoping that through the work that we're doing together and with their ambassadors and our Sogosan volunteers, that we really can start to see a significant impact being made, in particular in areas in South Africa like waste, for example.
Mm. And I remember a campaign that I was involved with a little bit, just supporting. Waste starts or stops with me?
Waste stops with me, indeed.
Yeah. But it also starts with me, doesn't it?
It always starts with you.
Yeah, so it was hashtag waste stops with
That's
me.
That's right.
I remember.
Yeah, and that doesn't only relate to waste in terms of, you know, your rubbish that you're throwing away. That's living in a wasteful manner. Mm. So that's, perhaps being wasteful about the way that you don't switch off your lights in your house, or leaving your taps with drips and wasting water.
Or I think there was Catherine was talking about meat-free Mondays because of the impact that
agriculture
has on the environment.
Absolutely.
and the consumption that goes into rearing this meat product.
Yeah, the single largest carbon emission contributor is agriculture.
Yeah, cattle, yeah.
Yeah, which is quite a sobering thought when you think about it.
It is. And you know what's so interesting is that I don't know how many of our listeners, certainly perhaps even me, would have thought that from I'm going to diminish this and say a hotel brand, which is not, I mean, you're so much more, but a hotel brand would talk about the single biggest carbon emissions issue is from agriculture.
Exactly.
Those kind of those two statements don't really go marry each other, but through you they do. So, that's Miss Earth.
Yeah.
You wanted to say something, but I'd like us to talk a little bit about this entrepreneur thing, because we had your winner here last week. What a fantastic winner.
Yes,
but let's talk about the entrepreneurship thing.
Yeah, so the other part of citizenship is Sorgesen Entrepreneurs. And that program has proven to be extremely effective in ensuring that people running small businesses are confident enough and significant enough to go and do business with big business. And that's really our goal.
Beyond the CSI aspect of it, though, now we all know that you actually have roots in entrepreneurship.
Yes.
And so you could feel the pain, that you're empathetic to some of the situations that you're coming across as
Absolutely.
You look into your supply chain and see these individuals who need to be assisted.
Yeah. So I do. And I think, I'm glad that you've made that connection now as well. But I feel that, only an entrepreneur can know what an entrepreneur feels like. And sometimes it can be a very lonely place. And I believe strongly that the reason why businesses don't last beyond sort of 18 months is because they feel completely insignificant. And so the main reason for us trying to inspire these entrepreneurs to greatness is to ensure that they can actually go out there and see themselves as serious role players and
really competitive
people who can compete, for any portion of the market, and so we use our program. Partly, we've got obviously all the practicalities that a business requires from a skills development point of view and so on, but we also concentrate on leadership. And the big thing that we're trying to do and have, I think, succeeded in doing over the last 2 or 3 years is transforming people from a managerial mindset into a leadership mindset. And we just had our conference, our annual entrepreneur conference 2 weeks ago. And, some of those people, because once people have graduated out of the program, they're still invited to continue to participate as alumni.
Alumni, yeah.
And so we teach them how to become mentors or to give back to the new people coming in and so on.
Which is I learned about this leadership process once, where the final thing in your leadership legacy is to be able to empower and give back and apply back into mentorship is part of that.
Yes. So a lot of these, we've been running the program for 12 years now. And a lot of the people that I only see them once a year, some of the alumni, but I have seen them consistently once a year for 12 years, some of them, others for less. But when I see the change in them, and it is the most inspiring thing, I think, and such a privilege to be able to witness people stepping into their own power.
And that's a beautiful phrase. Witness people stepping into their own power. That's beautiful.
Yeah. So really, I feel that Hezron, who is our new Entrepreneur of the Year, and I listened with great interest to his interview last week, and he had his business partner, Andrew, with him. And I just thought, isn't this fantastic? We've got such a young, vibey, contemporary brand that every South African can relate to, who is the Sorgesen Entrepreneur of the Year this year. And, it excites me. And I just think, this is the future. These are the new South African heroes.
By the way, if you're listening and you're curious about who this individual is and their background, also some of their journey, go back and listen to that podcast. You can find it on cliffcentral.com. But we're not talking about that right now. We're talking to Candy, who you've got a phenomenal journey. You really have done some phenomenal stuff. we actually have gone over time.
Oh.
Did you know that?
I didn't know that.
Because time moves so fast. Yeah, and what you've been sharing is so valuable, I couldn't cut us off. But maybe in winding down, let me just ask a couple of questions, if I may.
Mm.
Just maybe a bit of a quick fire question around, and just your instinctual insights, please. First, the worst advice you've ever received. What is that? Worst advice.
The worst advice I've ever received was to speak my mind without thinking it through.
Mm. Okay. Shoot from the hip.
Well, you know how people say, you know, go and if you're in a bad situation and somebody says, I think you need to go and have a word with that person.
Mm-hmm.
That is definitely not good advice.
And fix it for us. Because there is a portion of that seems it like it's right.
Speaking truth to power is very, very important.
Very nice, okay.
And there's a lovely saying, I can't remember the lady's name who said it. I think it's a lady called Maggie Kuhn. But she's quoted as saying, speak your mind even if your voice shakes.
Mm.
So I'm not advocating about for that, but what I am saying is, in a moment of anger, do not go and have your say.
Mm.
Rather go and sleep on it if you can, and have your say when you aren't angry. Then speak truth to power.
Someone once said, and we've all heard it, go and write it down and see if you would deliver that letter to someone the next day.
Very good.
Or whether you would tear it up. And I actually have done that, and I actually have
torn
letters
up.
Yeah, I really have.
Very wise.
And then you rewrite, and you write and you see things differently. Thank you. Thank you for that. Okay, so that's the worst advice you've ever received. Thank you for also the correcting it. What is the best advice you've ever received?
The best advice I've ever received is to, and this might sound trite, but I will elaborate on it. But the best advice that I've ever received, I received it consistently throughout my life from my mother. And she always said, let's make it fun. Now, it sounds trite at first.
It can be.
But in fact, you know, really, that is the purpose of everything.
Mm.
And if you can find it in yourself, if you're going through statistics and looking at spreadsheets and analyzing data, you know, imagine making that fun. You know, how awesome would your job be if you were a data analyst? If you could keep that in the back of your mind and realize that actually it's all meant to be good.
Mm.
It's all meant to be enjoyable.
My mom actually shared something similar with me, and she said, and I'll always remember it, she said, the sacred is in the ordinary.
Mm-hmm.
And it wasn't her quote, but she was just passing it on to me. She said,
absolutely.
Gareth, remember, the sacred is in the ordinary.
Yeah.
Okay, very nice. Thank you.
And keep it simple.
Very nice. Okay, so are you a reader?
I'm an avid reader, yes.
Good. And this is the point where Hlubi would say leaders are always readers, mm-hmm. and they absolutely are, whether or not that means books or online. They're continually learning, continually consuming. A book that you would recommend to our future CEOs community, what is that?
A book I would recommend, firstly, all business books. Give them a go.
Mm.
People are inspired to write their stories as people – those people who have written business books from personal experience, generally they, you know, the reason that they need to share this information is because they have a unique story to tell and they've succeeded, and usually against the odds. And I think that when you are in business for yourself, and even in a corporate environment, you often feel that no one is on your side.
Can I quickly jump in? Are you advocating for the book that is a autobiography or biographical in nature?
Yes. So other people's stories.
Mm.
And it's my favorite business book, and I always give it to our first year entrepreneurs as they walk through my door, is a book by Richard Branson.
Mm-hmm.
It's a very small little book.
Mm-hmm.
It's called Screw It, Let's Do It.
Let's Do It, yeah. Great book.
And that I would recommend as a as an easy read. You can refer back to it, open on any page. There's wisdom in there.
And what's so nice about that book is it's really Richard Branson talking to you.
Yes.
It's just it's like what we're doing
it's
here.
It's human. Yeah.
It is, exactly.
Yeah.
And so, by the way, if you're not a reader, just continue to listen to future CEOs, because we'll have people like Candy here and listening to her story. Okay, so that's a great book. Then maybe a final question to bring us home here on Future CEOs is, if you could go back in time and talk to the young 20-year-old future CEO, future GM of corporate affairs for a massive JSE-listed organization, what would you say to you, the 20-year-old you, what would you say to yourself? What advice?
I would say to myself, keep going. It always gets better. Inevitable.
Mm.
The inevitability of life is that it always gets better as long as you keep going.
Can I challenge it for a moment? Just not because I want to challenge it. I appreciate it and I agree with it. It's just, what about those people that just are in this what seems like a free fall, where they just are in the spiral and it's just not getting better?
It will get better. That's the beauty of keeping going, is that the only time it doesn't get better is when you quit. So you just need to keep on keeping on, keep putting one foot in front of the other, keep getting out of bed in the morning, keep showing up, and it will get better.
And there's no better way to end the show than on "it will get better." Candy, so thank you so very much for joining us here in the Future in the Cliff Central studio on Future CEOs. It's a great pleasure to chat to you, and thank you for sharing.
Thank you for having me. I appreciate it.
All right, that's all we have time for this week on Future CEOs. We look forward to seeing you in inverted commas, same time, same place next week. Go to cliffcentral.com to get or download all of our podcast. There's some fascinating conversations just like we've had today. We look forward to seeing you again soon.
Future CEOs on cliffcentral.com. Cliff Central.
The revolution.
I've got something important to tell you.
cliffcentral.com.